Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for coming back for another episode of the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, and welcome to Sunday. Thanks so much for telling all your friends about this podcast. I know that for some of you, it really engages your mind and keeps you thinking throughout the week. That is my intent, after all. And today's not going to be any different. I think if you grasp what I'm saying today, it's going to resonate with you, and you're going to see the implications pop out in many, many ways. Now, typically, I don't draw out the implications for you. I let you do that work on your own. And as you do, you find that this content is more nuanced, perhaps, maybe even richer than you thought. Today's topic is called the burden of belief. The burden of belief. What am I talking about? Well, follow along, and I think you're going to be enlightened. We know that religion sells salvation. You see, religion promises us a better life, but only on the other side of belief. Right? We don't get that promised new life on this side of belief. So then religion gives us a storyline to kind of nudge us along the way and help us to believe. And most of us are taught either to question these beliefs or to never question these beliefs. You see, each system of faith, each religion has its own assimilation process of turning outsiders into insiders. And that's their idea of turning non-believers into believers. In Christianity, we call that evangelicalism. Now, salvation typically implies a threshold. You know, salvation is that point at which unbelief becomes belief. Before, not saved. After, saved. It's the transition between grave danger and perfect safety. And those who are in power usually set the bar. And this bar is set differently at every church and synagogue and mosque and place that you would go. And those in power define the terms for those that will believe. And these terms basically shift the burden of belief to the outsider by forcing a binary choice on each person. Meaning, will you be in or will you be out? Right? So the burden of belief is shifted to the unbeliever. And basically then it becomes a competition, or most commonly an argument about why you would be out when you could be in. And my question today is, does real belief emerge under a threat? I mean, too often it's believe or else, right? If you read the Quran, Allah is not friendly to the disbeliever. If you follow the typical modern Christian story, Jesus loves you no matter what, unless you don't pick his team, and then he will punish you forever in hell. This is a threat to get you to believe. And so those who respond to the threat usually have a faith that's based in fear, which I would question whether or not it's a real faith. And I get that it can start there, but does real belief emerge under a threat? I think there's a different way for real belief to emerge. And see, if we choose in, then the in herd will validate our choice. And if we choose out, then the in herd will pity us. They'll reject us. They might even despise us. Because we can only pick one team in a forced binary choice. And out must be the wrong choice if you're in. See how this works? And so religion becomes competitive, you know? And when faith or belief becomes the faith, which is a system of belief, it becomes competitive. It becomes a social convention. And true faith is not a social convention. True faith is not an external attestation to the group think. Faith is that deep part within us that longs for and identifies with the deep elsewhere. The fact that a deep yearning exists within each human soul, despite the various delivery systems for it, this proves that there must be a consummation for it. So where do we find satisfaction for this deep kind of thirst? The deep inside you kind of thirst. That question, where do you get the answer? You see, when belief is commoditized in a religion, we begin to doubt that our deep part ever existed. You know, you just kind of go through life and you push it away, or you ignore it, or you deny it, or you get distracted with everything else that's going on. And pretty soon it's not even that important. You see, it's all too easy to gain a religion that puffs up our ego, but barely quenches our thirst for inner experience. Too often, the system that is supposed to point us to God actually becomes a surrogate for God. Like we buy the system and miss God. In Matthew 23, the whole chapter is Jesus ripping on religious people who have bought the system hook, line, and sinker and have missed God completely. Yes, is that possible? It's not only possible, it's predominant. True faith starts with humble wonder and grows from there on a path as unique as each one of us. See, the goal of faith is identification with a single story, not a particular single process or a single system. A single story. Once you grow in your faith, you realize there really is only one story, not all a bunch of different stories. And when you're a part of it, then that's how faith emerges. True belief is not binary. It's not either or. Belief in that something more, which I call God, isn't an on-off switch that we control. And as such, it is not a burden. It's not a forced choice. It isn't sold or pressed into us from the outside. Faith is germinated on the inside. Faith is both the question and the answer that arises from that deepest part of our being, our soul. You know, Hebrews 11 basically says faith is what we know and don't know at the same time. And so if it's both a question and an answer, and both what we know and don't know, then it can't be binary. And so a binary framework cannot produce a mature faith. Oh yeah, when you're just a baby or you're in the larval stage of development, then fear or threat, either or, good, bad, binary frameworks kind of help us. Just like a toddler, when you tell them that's a no touch, that's a hot stove, danger, no touch. You know, that hot, cold idea works when we're toddlers in our faith. But gosh, we can't stay there, folks. You see, we are all people of faith. And too often I hear people say, well, I'm not really a person of faith. I'm not a religious person. I don't even subscribe to any religion. I didn't grow up that way. I don't really believe in God. I'm not a person of faith. It's not true. There's not a single person ever living or who has ever lived that is not a person of faith. Nobody's exempt from faith. Faith is just putting our weight on our life, putting the whole weight of our life on various bridges and seeing if they hold us. And if they do, then we gain the distance of understanding, don't we? We get to move forward and say, those bridges hold me and I trust them. And if they don't, then we experience broken promises and we learn those things don't hold up my weight. It's the process of faith. It's part of the human experience. And we all have faith. We put our faith in different things. Now, faith is always in flux. It's not like you just went to church and got a faith and then just stuck. It's just solid and immovable. No. Faith is bouncing constantly between certainty and doubt. And it's like toggling between AM and FM to find a clear signal, right? You're always searching for that thing to come in. It's like you only have 2 bars on your phone, and other times you have 4 bars on your phone. Sometimes faith is dormant or it's on life support. You're just barely hanging on. You're not even sure if you believe at all. And a lot of times it sits there and plays dead, but it doesn't really die. When somebody says they have no faith at all or they lost their faith, it's because something painful happened and they just took it out of their line of focus. You see, faith follows our unique flow of life. Up and down, good and bad, hard times, good times. And it does so because faith is made of the same fabric as God, who is dynamism, movement, flow. Faith has to flow because God is flow. And so there is no single path to belief. And so the conversion process of most religions all try and structure this and create cones and say, first this, then that, and then you're in. But that doesn't work for authentic faith. Yes, you can get into a church system. Yes, you can be accepted by a religion. But that doesn't mean that you've gained God in your life. Faith like this, the kind I'm talking about, is like a desert exile. That's why this blog is called How to Thrive in Exile. You see, there are countless religious leaders out there that want to enroll us into their particular way, but there are few spiritual directors who are a resource to those finding their own way. It takes a wide-angle lens to lead people into their faith, without imposing one faith on them. You know, if you follow the old structures, then, you know, they're going to always warn you about dead ends or detours or your failings, and they're going to scare you into compliance. But the faith of the exile, like I'm talking about, dead ends and detours and failings are not derailments to authentic faith. They're requirements. It's not like your sin removes your faith. Your sin is required for your faith. Try that one on. Faith is that inner experience of transformation from the inside out by way of everything in life. It's not just the things you learn at church on Sunday. It's just not the stuff that Caleb sings about. Inner transformation takes place every day of the week and every moment throughout the ebb and flow of your entire life. It's the constant adjustment of our life's knobs to ensure that we're tuned into increasing conformity to the signal that's being sent. But sometimes we miss the real signal, that deep calling to deep. And we just tune into the signal that's the loudest, and that's usually the one from our religious institution. And then one day, and I pray that this day happens for you, and hopefully soon, if it hasn't already. One day, it just dawns on us that the purpose of our faith is not to find the signal at all. It's to find the sender of the signal. You see, we look over our lives and we ask, what is the sender saying by all of this? How did I get here? What is this all for? What is the meaning of my life? Is there any purpose to all of this? It's so hard. It's so much struggle. There's so much pain. There's so much suffering. See, now we're getting at it. This is where we are in the closest proximity to satisfying the deep thirst of our life. We exhale the questions and we inhale the answers. You see, our being creates our doing, not vice versa. You see, that's why religion gets it wrong. In a binary framework, it tells you all the things you can do and can't do. And then it says by default, if you do these things, then you get to be this thing. Now, James 1:25 is pretty clear. Our being creates the doing. It's who you are from the beginning. It's the cry of the deep from who you are. That's the faith. That's the voice, the signal, the sender that's coming that you have to tune into. And so don't worry what your faith looks like in comparison to everybody else's. Romans 14:22 says that your faith needs to be between you and God alone. So don't worry if it looks different. Don't worry about if your life is messier or painful or not as good as everybody else's. It's perfect. It's exactly the story that needs to be told. It's exactly the signal that's being sent. You see, once you kind of grow up a little bit, experience replaces process. And I think our institutions are good at giving us a process. That's the goal. And I know that in the sincerity of their hearts, they are not just trying to give us process for the sake. They're trying to give us a process so that we have access to finding experience. But too often, the two are confused. And Isaiah 61 says that we gain a beautiful headdress for our ashes, beauty for ashes, which means that the ashes are part of the beautification process. You see, new life emerges out of the mist of our necessary mess that we make out of our life. It's supposed to go bad because that's how we grow and see what is actually good. Once our eyes open, we see the community of faith surrounding us. And these are not just churchgoers. These are people all around us who have been touched and changed and transformed by suffering, by life. They've had a few beatdowns. They've learned humility. They learned that they're not the center of the universe. You know, they've learned some of these lessons, and this becomes the community of faith. And they've all suffered, and they've all had to die these little deaths, and some literal deaths. And they're rising again and again in this cruciform pattern of suffering, decline, death, burial, and renewal. Suffering, death, burial, renewal. Death, burial, renewal. It's the cruciform pattern. It's the story that's everywhere. And you see, each unique life is retelling this same story over and over and over again. And that doesn't matter if you call it the crystal form pattern, you might call it something else. But it's there. It's undeniable. And see, the sender is the story. And every person who can see beyond their life experience, don't just get stuck in it and say, this is my crappy life. But if you can get beyond it and say, this experience has a purpose. I'm at this point of the story. I'm in the death part. I'm in the burial part. I'm in the renewal part. And you identify with all these others, then and only then, that experience. You get to experience that story as salvation. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.